This is apartment 303.
Didn't they say 304? No, 303. I wrote it down twice.
Apartment 303, which I've definitely heard of.
Greetings, human beings, and welcome back to Apartment 303, a podcast for community fans. My name is Dave, and alongside my co-host Dan, we are here every month to discuss all things community, each and every layer of the show, and why we love it so much.
Hello, everyone. This is Matt from Communities. I have the actor and writer and co-host from Apartment 303, Dan Nye, with me. And we're talking to writer and producer, comedian and mustache ride impresario and director of 9 episodes of Community, the Jay Chandrasekhar. Jay, thank you for being here.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. I do want to start off with, very specifically, you have a movie coming out in August with Joe Coy.
That's right. I have a movie coming out August 5th. It's called Easter Sunday. It was going to come out around Easter Sunday, but you know, the flu, the whatever it was, the pandemic.
Oh, that thing. Okay.
What happened was during the pandemic, Joe Coy, as you probably know, he has 3 Netflix specials, and he's also the biggest ticket selling comic in show business.
I saw. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Well, during the pandemic, I guess Spielberg was, you know, clicking around, and he ended up happening on Joe Coy's special. And he said, that guy, we want to make a movie with that guy. And so they called me up and they said, can you go to Vancouver and shoot this movie with Joe Coy? And I said, yeah. And so,
Hold on. Spielberg pitched you something.
Well, and you were like,
let me check my schedule.
And, I hired a friend of mine who's a really good writer, and she took the script, which was already pretty good. And we kind of rewrote it, and then we shot the movie. And Universal is going to release it August 5th, wide release. This is both something I'm proud of, but also terrible. It's the only wide release comedy of the summer.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
That's how Running Scared some of these studios have gotten. But I said to Universal, I'm like, we're going to bring the theatrical release comedy back. I said, you know, you can look around, wonder who's going to do it. And in fact, it's going to be us. So
I believe. I have faith.
So just for clarity, there's no multiverses in the Easter movie, just to be sure. There's just one Sunday.
There's not going to be a Palm Friday. There's not going to be a Good Friday.
Joe watched the movie recently and he goes, I love this movie. We're doing every holiday in the book.
I'm really crossing my fingers for Arbor Day.
Well, Community's really experienced with having episodes appear at the wrong time. Their Christmas episode was on Valentine's Day in season 4. So did no harm, no foul.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. I think it's just we all know how we feel around that holiday. And you're like, yeah, we get it. You know, don't worry about the marketing people being so, it's got to be Easter Sunday. It doesn't matter.
Well, not to mention, you'll literally have the market cornered. If you're the only comedy coming out this summer, like, oh, we want something else, like all these superhero movies. Let's go see something funny.
Yeah, that, and in 2023, you know, around Easter, if the movie's any good, people are going to be like, hey, let's watch that Easter Sunday movie. And then that's, you know, there's not another Easter Sunday movie. So, yeah. Except for The Passion of the Christ, but I don't know.
Slightly different vibe.
I don't know.
Right? What's your family holiday like? Well, you can tell by the movies we watch. We heard a little birdie tell us that you have strong feelings about Rotten Tomatoes, and I may or may not be lockstep in line with that. Can you elaborate a little bit of why you are not a fan of that service?
Okay. 20 years ago, goes way back, I made a film called Super Troopers, right? We get to Sundance. We're the toast of Sundance. Everybody loves us. Oh, so funny, incredible. Searchlight buys the movie for $3.5 million. We made it for 1.2. So we're like, yay. Then a year later, the film comes out theatrically in the country, and the reviewers on Rotten Tomatoes give it an aggregate score of 35% fresh. And we were like, what? You should have seen Sundance. We were the. And it was just, you know, reviewers, by the way, I'm friends with a lot of movie reviewers, and they're entitled to their opinion individually. But when you aggregate them, nobody even reads the reviews anymore. They just look at the score and they go, 35% yep. Fresh must be terrible. So now over the years, Rotten Tomatoes had let the audience kind of weigh in, right? And The audience was 200,000 people. They gave it 90% fresh. The reviewers were 100 people. They gave it 35% fresh. So, I said to a reviewer, I'm like, what? This is not fair. And they said, well, what do you care? You're a comedy. You get to make tons of money. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, it matters. People don't go to the movies because of these stupid aggregate score. And at the end of the day, reviewers are like, you know, they're like online people. If they make fun of you, if they trash you, then they get more viewers, right? People like that kind of, and they can't trash Mr. Spielberg because they can't trash dramas because they want to go to the Oscar parties. So they trash us. And unfortunately for them, they messed with the wrong guy. Because I said to myself then, I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to get revenge on Rotten Tomatoes. And what happened was this, right? I said to myself, over the years, it's just been stewing and these aggregates. We made him a film called Beer Fest, right? There was a review out of Arizona that went into our 38% fresh Beer Fest score. And it was from Grandma's Reviews. And she said, I didn't like Beer Fest. There's a little too much drinking. And you're like, Grandma, Grandma, it was an ode to binge drinking, Grandma. Anyway, so I said, who are these strangers, right? Who are they? Who are these reviewers? They're just strangers, right? And it would be like, when's the last time you walked up to a stranger on the street and said, hey, excuse me, stranger, what movie should I see?
No.
And that's what it is, mm-hmm. right? We don't do that. What we do is we ask our friends, you know, we hear about a movie and through the press, we ask our family because they know what kind of movies we like. So I built a machine, an app with these two other guys who were, you know, they were upset about how the Amazon reviews or the Yelp reviews, they're like, who wrote them? Like, is it the owner of the restaurant says it's a great restaurant, or is it the guy across the street with his restaurant saying it's a terrible restaurant? Like, who knows? They're all strangers, right? Mm-hmm. So we built an app called Vouch Vault. Okay. It's in the App Store and Apple and Google. Vouch Vault. And Vouch Vault it's basically, we're calling it like the Instagram of recommendations. And so there it is. Chips Ahoy. Did you vouch for Chips Ahoy?
I probably should. I eat them.
I love it. But I mean, you can vouch for anything, right? So
yeah.
Movies, TV, books, music, podcasts, cars, power screwdrivers, bows and arrows, golf courses, restaurants, anything you love, you vouch for. So if you follow me at J Chandrasekhar, you'll see, you'll kind of get the point, right? It's like, I love Goodfellas. I love 48 Hours. I love the band, The Grateful Dead. I love the sushi restaurant in Studio City. And you know, like my friends will follow me and I'll follow them and they'll be like, oh, there's this great, you know, like when you're at a dinner party and someone's like, hey, you should watch this funny TV show on the BBC Three. And you're like, oh yeah, I put a note in it, right? And then you can't find it. But in this app, there's a thing called a Vouch Vault, which are things you loved. And a thing called a Tri Vault, which are like things I heard about. You just pop up, click on a ribbon, and it goes into the Tri Vault. So when you're home on Friday going, what should I watch? What should I watch? Oh, you look in your Tri Vault. You're like, oh, I watched this thing on BBC Three. And I'm trying to get the recommendations to be trusted. So it's your mm-hmm. friends. If you follow me and you like the movies I've made, maybe you'll listen to my recommendations. You know, you can see where we all lined up, you and I, and we all have like 8 or 10 things we both agree on. So maybe the 11th thing, maybe you want to try it. Books, anything. So I'm hoping I'm coming for you, Rotten Tomatoes.
I mean, good.
Now, I think for community fans, this fits because there's no group that was on Twitter more desperate for people to see. I mean, there were fans that were in the critics, and there were great critics that loved the show.
Sure.
But the fans on Twitter were constantly just reaching out for others saying, see this favorite thing. You need to understand why this Donald Glover walking into a room that's on fire is funny. You need to watch because of this meme. So, yeah, we get this. This makes complete sense.
Yeah, I mean, the community fans saved us every year. Like, it felt like they're like, we're probably not coming back. And then the community fans would raise hell and somehow we'd be back.
I was going to jump ahead a little. Did they ever come up to you and give you the, oh, hey, can this also be a series finale talk?
Well, you know, for sure. Every single time you're doing the last one of any show, you're like, the series finale, or, you know, you have to act like it is. And we all walk around going, that would be unfair. The fans need to say goodbye. And we all do that. And nobody cares what we say. But ultimately, you know, there was a lot of six seasons in a movie when I was there. Like, you know, there's a lot of that. A lot
still happens every day on Twitter, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Every day. Not just my account. I'm just not saying I do it every day. I'm saying it's out there.
But we got six seasons, right? I mean,
we got six seasons. We just need Dan to write the script.
I told Dan when I last saw him, I'm like, six seasons of a movie. Let's do the movie.
Is that you volunteering to direct it?
Of course.
Of course I
direct the movie. And, you know, I'm sure Schraub and I'm sure the Russo, I don't know about the Russos. They're flying people around in suits. if the offer comes my way, the answer is yes before I even finish a sentence.
That's a stamp. We're going to quote that. That's going to be the pull quote from this entire interview.
Well, okay. I think number one, thank you for that, because that's great. Because Dan's talked about this before. There are directors, people that are known to be directors of the show, fans will walk up to them and ask them about the movie. I know it's just you got nothing to tell them, but it's nice that, you know, it's on the minds. That's a nice touch. Yeah, Justin Lin gets asked. The Russo brothers get asked. They're like, oh, you just made Endgame. Have you thought about the Community movie yet? No, I heard it. He did an interview like a month after the movie dropped, and that's one of the first questions he got. I was like, oh, you poor devil.
I make no apologies. It wasn't me, but I'm still not apologizing.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. I do want people to know that, yeah, you've directed 9 episodes of Community, but you have directed over 130 episodes of television across 47 shows. Most of them I've seen, which I felt really weird. I think I'm behind on the Goldbergs as the only one. And Goldberg has Mebane, Bazelon was there, Rolo was there. One of the showrunners from season 4 was there that worked on the show.
Yeah.
And you got 24 episodes of Goldbergs, which is a great show. Every time I watch it, I was in the 80s. It feels very much like my childhood.
Yeah.
You're connected. How did you get into directing television at this level? This is a lot.
It's funny when you say 130 episodes. You may be right. But
it's 131 according to IMDb.
Yeah, there are about 19 missing. I've been telling people it's over 150 episodes, and I've also been telling people I never got a cake after 100, and I never got a cake after 150.
Whose job is that? I want to know.
Who's in charge of show
business? Who's in charge of the cake? Yeah.
And I'm sitting here without my damn cake. You know, I mean, I just want the Lifetime Achievement Award people to. I hope they're watching this. Because, you know, if I have, what more do I have to do?
How many more episodes? I think there's like a minimum. You got to get to 300, and then there's a ribbon, and then you get to 400, then you get the cake.
Clearly.
And 500's the Emmy, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that's how it goes.
Yeah.
No, that's a lot. I just didn't know how did you get into directing television?
I directed a film called Puddle Cruiser first, which was we went to Sundance with that as well. It was a Broken Lizard movie, which is my comedy group. It's set at Colgate University, where we went to school. We all play college kids. And NBC and ABC gave us television deals after that. NBC made a pilot of Puddle Cruiser, that film, like a network thing. And we decided to stick with the movies, and we cast some young, some actual like teenagers to be in that movie, to play us in college. The show was called Safety School. And so, because Colgate was with Safety School, everybody who went to Colgate got rejected at Dartmouth. And so we shot this thing, and we were like 25, maybe 24 when I directed that. And it lit a fire at NBC. They're like, this is the youth movement, youthquake. We got to do this. And I found myself in the president of NBC's office right before the upfronts. And he's like looking at me, and I'm 25 and I got a huge hole in my shirt. And he goes, I'm going to hand over $35 million to you. And I'm like, yes, sir. I've made a $160,000 film, and I've made this pilot. Yes, sir. Hand it over. And he goes, I can't do it. I can't do it. And so it didn't go. And so I get a call from Judd Apatow. And Judd's like, come on over. I'm shooting this show called North Hollywood. And I said, okay, good. So I'm like, you know, I've heard of Judd because of I was a huge Larry Sanders fan. And Judd was the head writer for the Larry Sanders Show. which is, the, in my opinion, the greatest show ever made. Yeah. After Community.
There it is. Again, wasn't asking for it, but
so,
it's always appreciated.
So, yeah. So Judd's like, hey, we're on the set. And he goes, well, I'm watching him shoot. And he goes, you know, I saw your pilot safety school. It's incredible. Should have gone. I mean, it should have gone, but it didn't. And so I decided to make the same show. It's called Undeclared. And I want you to come direct it. I've already got it on Fox. And I was like, and I watched it. I'm like, yeah, it's the same show.
Is there anything to compliment on that?
I don't care. It's not happening. He goes, I know. That's what I thought. So I ended up shooting four of his, it was a really great show, Undeclared. I did four episodes.
I remember it. Yeah.
Seth Rogen and Charlie Hunnam and
Jay Baruchel.
Jay Baruchel and yeah, and Tim. And it was just a really fun. It was a fun time, and I mean that I'm not slagging Judd off. He's a great guy and a friend of mine. But that's what he said. It was funny. So I did four of those, and then once I did those, I ended up. If you're able to direct well for a network, they look at you as like a working screwdriver and
you're in the stable.
Yeah. Let's take that screwdriver and put them over here. And so I ended up on Arrested Development, mm-hmm. A show the Russos did the pilot for.
Yeah.
And, you know, Arrested Development was just sort of like, I saw the pilot and there were so many characters that they had to, it was packed. It was just, in my view, a little too fast, you know? And I said to those guys, I'm like, you know, this show is incredible, but I just slow the pace down a little and, maybe try to do a little fewer cuts or what, new shows are just, they're never really, look at early Seinfeld, it evolved into something else. I said, I have a theory on how this show could be just as good, a little more slowly cut. And they said, okay, try it. So I did one. They're like, yeah, great. And the Russos are like, yeah, we should do that. You know, we all kind of built the beginning of that show with Mitch Hurwitz, who's the head boss. I mean, those guys wrote such great material. It was just looking at it a little differently, right? So, and then, I did a bunch of those and that kind of worked out. And then eventually I got the call from Dan Harmon.
Did you know Dan before this? Or did you know anything about Community?
No, I didn't know Dan. I knew about Community because it was on TV. But I mean, it must have, I'm not sure if it was Dan that brought me over to NBC, but it was, it might have been, like that to cross from Fox to NBC. It wasn't that, when you're starting out, it's not that common. Somebody has to see your work and go, oh, this will work over here. And then I did tons of work for them. And, it's just how that works. But yeah, Dan, I could tell quickly that he was like the mad scientist type. He'd like just like very funny, disheveled, sleepy looking, brilliant scripts, just late scripts, but really good. And, we discussed the 7 o'clock time slot versus the 7:30 time slot. That was 2 hours of chatter where we're like, and then this ABC thing. And then, this happy day, he is a student and he's a professor of television. And I was like, I want to work with this guy.
That was definitely a question we had. How much did you, just in general for the script work, like how early would you get it? How much would it change? And how different would it look in that whole time? I'm so curious.
I'm just laughing because Jay's face changed when you started asking that question. I'm like,
we kind of, to give you a little peek behind our curtain, we kind of already know. We know so much about this show. It's a little ludicrous, but we kind of want to hear it from the horse's mouth.
The director's job is made easiest when there is a script done.
However, that sentence got a little fragmented.
I make films, right? My creative itch is very well scratched by Broken Lizard movies. So I don't need this television show to go, well, let me show you what Jay Chandrasekhar thinks. I'm here and I tell the creator, I'm like, I'm here to make your show as good as it can be. I'm like, show me the best episode of your show you've ever done. And I intend to beat it. Like that's what I try to do. I want to make you feel like, yes, that's it. Cause I want you to, showbiz runs on compliments. Right. And mm-hmm. at the end of this, I want you to compliment me.
By the way, this is a terrific interview. Just unrelated. We're so happy to have you.
Oh, thank you very
much. More of that, more flattery.
There's a, we talked to Andy Bobrow several times. Andy, it's been great with the fans. And he talked about being on the, because your first episode is Mixology, which for many of the fans who appreciate film and television, it's a top 10 episode if it's not a top 5. It's not like any other episode. It's arguably the most grounded episode Community ever produces, because it's about Troy 2021. People need help. There's unanswered questions. When you came in and did it, I know they're changing that one while you're shooting that one. Your very first one is like they're constantly changing it, and it ends up being this wonderful product. I just want to, what do you remember about that episode?
Well, my memory of it was that it was considered a bottle episode, right? And a bottle episode, for those of you who don't know what it means in show business, is you could shoot it inside a bottle. It's like the ship is in the bottle. We're going to just shoot, and we're only going to shoot inside here. And the idea is like, hey, we're running out of money. We need an episode that largely takes place in one place so that we stay to the budget and we get it done. So they're like, we're going to shoot. Now there's a drive into the bar. There's a scene in the study hall. Mm-hmm. And they drive to the bar, and then there's the bar scene, which is largely most of it. And then there's a scene in a hallway at the end with Annie and
Troy. Yep.
Yeah. But it's largely pretty small. I mean, we did it all in like one or two stages. And it was, that was my first one. So I wasn't terribly like a deep Community fan at the time. And so I looked at it and I'm like, well, it's obviously funny, and everybody's a good actor, and it's about being 21. And I'm like, I'm just gonna shoot a really funny, straight, show, because I couldn't find it. I'd seen an episode or two, and I'm like, it gets a little crazy sometimes, but there wasn't anything in the script that was all that crazy.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's gonna be good. And I could see it as I was shooting it. Everyone's performing well, and Annie's little Texas accent was great, and et cetera. I'm like, you could do this accent, and you're totally believable. And so I think there was a bit about Shirley being an alcoholic in her past.
Yeah, yep.
Right. That didn't feel goofy or nutty. And didn't Joel kiss? Did he kiss Britta
in the back of the car?
They're making out in the back of the car. Right.
That's right. And that's real. And so I just played it straight. And I didn't intend to do anything of the sort in terms of making it a very unique Community episode. I just tried to do a good job. And at the end, Dan Harmon called me and he goes, or he sent me an email. I have it somewhere. He's like, that was the most grounded my characters have ever been. And I love this, what you've done. He goes, you nailed every single joke, every single one. And if there's anything I can do for you in show business, you let me know. And I was like,
wow.
I was like, that's exactly the kind of pat on the back I can do. I was like, oh. And that was it. We made 8 more after that.
It's a absolute marker of an episode in a season of ridiculously great episodes. I mean, it's... Uh-huh. I can't overcomplicate Mixology. There's a line that this is Andy made a point. I'll do this real quick. Andy made a point. He's talking about his script constantly was getting changes because that scene in the hallway was added really late. And he's like, I'm not in the room and he's getting changed. I'm like, they're taking all the jokes out. And what Dan said to him was, he trusts the audience to get it, to understand what's happening, that it's a grounded episode. And so I think your direction, your dailies that are coming in are the reason they made that switch. Because it's meant to be a funnier episode. It's meant to have more jokes, and they pull them out. Uh-huh. So I think this is all you, Jay.
Well, years later,
I didn't have that plan, but I love to hear that idea. I would say, frankly, I'd be shocked if that were the case. Because Dan Harmon, I'll give you an example. I did I think it was the Winnebago one.
Harvey and Palmer Street, season 6, episode 10, yep. I think, 9 or 10.
I think this is the, no, this is not the, or it might have been the, it might have been that one, or it might have been the one. I just want to make sure I'm picking the one where he wasn't gone.
Oh, he was gone in season four. So
he's,
yeah,
only in season four, six, which is advanced documentary film. Okay. That's the only one.
Advanced documentary film was the one with the third act. Was that, is it, do you know what I'm talking about? Do you remember that there's like a, there's an, there's like a part of a story that follows the characters around?
That was in Basic Story, I think.
Okay.
No, that's Basic, that's season five, episode 12.
Okay, anyway, so I think it was the hand on top of the roof, yes, in the Winnebago.
Yeah.
And in fact, I know it was. And that was Dan Harmon, right?
Yes, that's Dan.
Definitely. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. So here's what happens. I'm prepping this episode. It's, again, it's a bottle episode, right? Because they're like, it's going to be in a Winnebago.
You have a few. I love looking at the different episodes because you have like three or four bottle episodes, and then you have some of the biggest ones that they undertake. So it's really interesting seeing the dichotomy of what you've put on for the show. Anyway.
Well, I mean, as a director, the big ones are fun because they're wild challenges, and they're 12 people in the room when we're doing the political debate, or we're doing the thing where he made me goopty goopty goopta.
Oh, we want to talk about that. Yeah.
I'll talk about that in a second. And they're huge scenes with like everybody has an interaction with everybody, and those are super fun because it's like they're math problems. The bottle ones, you're like, oh, it's, we're gonna get nice and human and real, and we'll craft jokes perfectly timed, two shots and three shots. I love those, but I love them all. But anyway, so I've been prepping this episode for with the hand on the roof and all that. And he's like, I just happened to run into him in the hallway and at Paramount and or wherever we were. And I'm like, oh, hey, what's up? He goes, yeah, no, we're just shooting the shit, talking about whatever. He goes, you making any movies? I'm like, yeah, whatever. And then he goes, what's that? What's that in your hand? I'm like, oh yeah, it's just the script. And he goes, for what? I said, for the show. Come here. And he goes, yeah, let me see. He goes like this, looking at it. He goes, and throws it over his shoulder. We're not shooting that. And I'm like,
how long did you prep on that particular script he threw over his shoulder?
I mean, of course, on that, by then there was no script on Monday. There was no script on Tuesday. Wow. There was no read through. I was like, now it's Thursday. I'm like, what are we shooting? And I get a script. I'm like, oh, okay, I got this. I need a top hat. I need a rollerblader. I need, you know, paint that all room green.
Giant oversized watch. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he's like, we're not doing that. We're not doing any of it. And
I said, wow.
Okay. And so Saturday, there's no script. Sunday, there's no script. And I'm like, I have to be at work at 7 a.m. So I wake up at 4 because I get a phone call. And they're like, the script is in. And I'm like, okay. And so I get up and I'm like, reading Jesus. This thing. And I'm like, okay, we need two guys who can roller skate. We need a very, very large top hat. We need whatever it was. Like, you're just like coming, you know, like, you know, can we get dogs? No dogs. Can we get cats? Like, it's like that. It was just for this episode, but you know what I mean? Yeah. It was just like, you're trying to come up, you know, you're like, oh, we need a Steadicam. I know a Steadicam guy. I'll wake him up. And so we get to the set and it's like, you know, there's this Winnebago set and I'm conflating two stories. Okay. Anyway, let's put that other story aside. Okay. This story, this actual Winnebago one, this is how it happened. So that morning, there is no, I'm going to backtrack. I wake up Monday morning. There's no script. I go to work. Now I'm at Paramount. There's no script. They call the actors in. It is 11 a.m. There's no script. And they're like, what are we doing? And I'm like, we're going to shoot the Winnebago. And they're like, what do you mean? What's it about? And I'm like, well, it was about something. Throw that out. They're like, I memorized. Okay, I forget. So, so then we get these pages come in at noon. And I'm like, okay, we got a script. Bring them back. Bring everybody in. And we're looking at it. And we got basically 5 pages of script. And I'm like, this is scene 7. He says, Because there's some other stuff. This thing's going to happen, and that happens, and Annie's might say that, and then this scene. And you're like, all right. It's just packed full of dialogue, packed full of dialogue. And I'm like, get the we have teleprompters now because of this kind of thing. So we bring in three truck teleprompters. I got three cameras. I put them all next to the thing. Everyone's like, oh, are we supposed to? I'm like, just read the prompter and then we're going to get there. And that's what we did. We shot that scene. And then the next morning, the script arrives for that morning. And then at lunch, the script arrives for that lunch. And then the next morning, script arrived for that whole day. We're like, okay, we got this one. And then it just came in and it came in and it came in. And then at the end of it, I watch it. I'm like, yeah, you pulled it off.
I pulled it off. You know, just-in-time inventory is not for script writing. That doesn't sound like the process. No, that's a manufacturing concept.
By then, I felt confident in Dan's warm bosom. I felt like, you know, I believe in this man as a human, just as a comedian and as a writer and as a creator. And, you know, look, he's got some issues about timing for scripts. And I said to him, I'm like, buddy, you're going over budget because of the not for any other reason except the scripts are coming in late. I said, if you want the show to go, just turn them. You're going to do them anyway. Just do them a little early. And he goes, if I only could. And I'm like, I know. I get it. I don't care. Just give us a script. I'll shoot exactly what you have. And if I think of jokes, I'll add them in too. And then I know at the end, it's all A is going to plus B is going to equal the proper thing. I'm sure of it.
And it's so interesting to hear, there's an equation, but it's real weird when he gives you J and then Z and then Q, and then it's like, them together later.
I mean, we had a tone meeting once, and a tone meeting is basically like, when you have a script, right, when you're lucky enough to have a script, you're supposed to just go through every page, and, you know, and he's like, you know, some creators are like, and this joke is funny because of this, and he goes, yeah, I mean, yeah. You made Super Trooper. You get the joke? I'm like, yeah, I get the joke. You get it, yeah. And so he goes, meet me at this restaurant in Los Feliz for the tone meeting on a Sunday. Because the script came in Sunday morning. I'm like, okay. So I drive over to this restaurant and we're sitting. It's the same restaurant where Matt Damon meets his wife and they bought a zoo. It's called Little Dom's. In fact, Dino Stamponopoulos, mm-hmm. Has a booth at Little Dom's with Dino's name on it because he
because he
drank enough there, Dino. So
put a little plaque under there that says Starburns.
Yes, I mean, so I'm there with Dan Harmon, who's in the next booth from Dino's, and he's like, and it's like it has to be noon or something, and he orders a White Russian, and I'm like, all right, I'll have a vodka soda. Right. So then we're kind of talking about like time slots and we're talking about the history of television and we both got the scripts and it's another one of these meetings. He goes, you know, you understand this, right? We get this thing. He goes, I have another White Russian. And I'm like, and he goes, didn't you make Beer Fest? I'm like, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm like, it's like we're six drinks in. We have not talked about anything. We're laughing and screaming about television. And he's like, ah, man, they need me to write that other script for the next thing. I got to go back to Fairmount. I'm like, how are you going to go? What? I mean, you're blasted. And he goes, well, yeah, maybe I'll take a little nap or something. I don't know. And so he gets in a cab and just leaves. And now I'm like drunk. And I'm like, well, I guess I left my car there, got in a cab. And left too. And I the next morning, I get a cab back to the car and I drive to Paramount and I go in and I'm talking to one of the writers. I'm like, because they had been there all night long.
Oh, Jesus.
Is what he did sometimes. So I'm like, what are you guys still doing here? It's like 7 in the morning. They're like, well, after your little thing at the ear end, Dan came back and fell asleep for 5-6 hours and then he woke up and he goes, we gotta work. And so then we worked all night long, thank you very much. And I was like, oh, just trust the genius.
That actually, I was curious about that. So you said for that tone meeting, it was like, you did Super Troopers, you know what we're doing. Was there ever a bit that he did have to elaborate to you on where it was like, this is either a very inside joke for the fans of Community or something where you're like reading the page and you're like, I know this is funny, but I don't know why it's funny.
You know, no, there was one thing, which is when I think they're teleported to space.
Or was it like that episode, the future projection?
Yeah.
Where it was like Space Elder Britta and Ahmed. Yeah. And yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like,
this is the show.
He goes, I want it to look like space. And I'm like, all right, we'll get some green screen. And I'm like, I have to say, I'm not 100% clear on the whole joke of it all. And he goes, you'll get it. And I'm like, okay. And so we're shooting it, and Abed and Britta are doing that kind of voice that they do for this thing. And I'm like, yes, I get it. I get it. This is wonderful. It's wonderful.
And it makes me so happy, like, to hear you talk about that too, because it's one of those things where sometimes the show is so dense, and especially in that episode where the jokes are coming, but they're overlapping so much that like you have to watch it three or four times. Otherwise you're going to miss some of those, especially with one of the things I was curious about, with a character like Abed, who it's almost like carte blanche to go in and out of self-awareness as far as how the show goes. You also had two great jokes in your episodes of him with facial hair being one of the space elders. And then the story where he looks up and he goes, me with a beard, like, some of those are so, and I want to talk specifically about the advanced documentary filmmaking where, no, is that the, I don't think that's the episode.
No, it's introduction to teaching.
It was an introduction to teaching. So when you have a scene, because this is, again, you understand the funny jokes. When you have Danny Pudi going full bore and getting into Nicolas Cage's head a la Being John Malkovich, what do you do first? Like, what is your direction? Did you just like set him in front of the camera and be like, okay, go? Or do you have to be like, okay, we need more thrusting and now meow like a cat? And now like, how far does it go? And how much do you be like, just do your thing, Danny?
I remember this moment, but what was the context of how
he watches too many Nicolas Cage's movies and he's obsessed to figure out if he's good or bad. And then the literal caption beneath says Nicolas Cage noises, which that's my favorite. And he does that sexy cat thing on the table.
Yes. Yeah. Doesn't he jump up there?
He jumps up on the table.
Jumps up there.
Yeah. So when you work with great comics, the fun part is that they get the joke. And, you know, my job, of course, is if you don't get the joke, let me explain the joke to you. But with Danny Pudi, he gets the joke. He'll ask me, I'm like, just do what you think is right. And then we'll probably add on from there. And so usually it's a situation where they do it a little smaller and they just go bigger, bigger, bigger. And with that, there was very little ceiling to it. You know, the cat thing, you're like, yeah, that works too.
More sexier cat.
And you know, they were all good at it. Like, I mean, Alison Brie is a top level comic. I mean, she's incredible. And you know, Donald Glover was great. And I got to tell a Donald Glover story. So
by all means,
I'll get back to that if you want to. But Donald Glover was leaving the show to go be a rapper, and he had a name,
Gambino.
Childish Gambino. And I was like, well, what are we going to do without Donald Glover? I mean, how do you got to have Donald Glover? And I took him aside. I said, look, man, I know singing is fun. I know, but don't do it. I said, it's never going to work. I mean, it never works. You're just going to be looking back and be like, why did I leave this great job? And now you're going to, and then when I'm at the forum watching Childish Gambino with my teenage son, I was like, let me tell you a story about how I told him.
Your dad was really wrong here.
And he's like, wow. He's hilarious. He's a great guy.
No, you said something about that on Twitter, and I laughed audibly when I read it. It's like, oops. Now, I want to ask you next about, I'm going to combine them because I know we have some sort of time limit. You have two episodes, Applied Anthropology and Culinary Arts, where Shirley has her baby, and you have the first Chang Dynasty, which is just ridiculously funny. But you're having to tie up long season arcs. Does that make it, and of course you've got a Chang Dynasty has a heist homage going on, an elaborate heist. Is it easier to do an episode where it has these complications already set in, or is it something like Intro to Political Science a little bit easier?
I mean, the standalones are easier because they don't require this deep knowledge of it. But I mean, the key is you have to study these when you get them, the scripts, and go, what does that mean? What does that reference? And, you know, the cast can sometimes tell you, but Dan can also tell you. But I mean, you know, the writer can tell you. There are a lot of people there who can go, well, this is a callback to this joke, and they'll show you the joke. And you go, ah, okay. So we'll make sure the faces are sort of similar size, you know, whatever it is. You try to call back that thing and wrap up that thing. Because you're a visitor on the set, you don't know all the jokes.
Yeah.
But for sure, it's, you know, nothing is too hard. It's just you have to pay attention. You know, yeah. If you pay attention, then you can, you know, like there were times when I was like, I don't love the accent you're doing. I said it to Joel McHale. And he goes, no, but it's a callback to the gag we've been doing that I guess you haven't seen yet. I'm like, I haven't seen that. He goes, I said, this is the voice. He goes, this is exactly the voice. I was like, oh, thank God you told me that, because I would have been like, don't do that voice.
My favorite bit in the Applied Anthropology, other than, of course, Britta going under the skirt and into the dark and then running out and throwing up, is where Dino and Charlie and Daniel Starburns and Neil are standing around saying, you remember when the study group left campus for that week and oh, what a great week it was. That's my favorite little joke there, because it's that little separate, you know, they actually didn't leave campus. It's a bit from the previous episode, but they're just standing around going, oh, that was a good week. Where it wasn't about them. And I said, I just like that third kind of viewing of it, just sort of moving to the side.
Yeah. I don't know why I thought of this, but this episode where it was the one where Gupta was in
Basic Email Security.
Yeah. Basic Email Security. And there's a riot in that episode, right?
There is.
So the riot was started by the guy who tips the garbage can over. Do you remember that at all?
Yes.
And suddenly he goes, boop. And the thing goes over, everyone goes ballistic. And I remember thinking, that is the greatest start to a riot, and exactly how it should start. Oh, there's one jerk kicking a garbage can.
Well, and it's just a gentle tip, which is why I think it plays so well, too, because it's such an innocuous start. It's
curriculum unavailable, I think. Charlie, Neil knocks over a trash can, and then everybody tears
up
the subway.
No, it's in wasn't his. Restaurant. I think it's in...
Is it Basic Email Security? I know there's a riot that comes to the door because it's barred.
It's the episode. It's Intro to Teaching.
Oh, Intro to Teaching. Yes, they have a riot there because the minuses negatives are made don't up. Matter. Plus and minuses don't matter.
Yes, oh, is that Lord. Why they riot?
Yes,
yeah, that's why they riot.
Plus and minuses don't matter when they find out. They're like, oh, we're being screwed out of whatever our grade could have been.
Right.
So that's did right. they, for? But going back to that, to Gupta, Gupti, Gupta, did they? Was that always supposed to be you? Like when they handed you that script, where they're like, can you do this character too?
No.
It wasn't?
I was on the set, and suddenly Dan Harmon was there, which was rare. I mean, he would come. When he come, I'm like, you know, maybe if Annie would say, I'm like, just talk to him. What do I care?
It's your show.
Tell him to do what you want. Yeah. And he would go in there and talk to them and whatever, and they would, you know. But it didn't happen a ton because he was, you know, when you're a showrunner, you're writing all these episodes, and then you're editing all these episodes. So the shooting, you're like... You know, you hope that's why they have rehired all those directors, because all those directors kind of understood the show. Yeah. And so in this case, he shows up and I'm like, hey, what's up? And he goes, I have an idea for this, because this wasn't even, we didn't even know where the episode was going yet. Like I think I'd shot a day or something. and we were just some stuff. And I don't know. I mean, I didn't know any of it really. I was shooting it and it was funny. And and he goes, I have an idea for the person who's going to visit campus is a really risque comic. And I thought, you know, I'm thinking like he could be Indian and maybe somebody who's already in the organization. And I was like, I said, the answer is yes. Now he goes, before you answer, I take the yes. But there are, there's going to be a lot of lines. And he goes, and it's got to shoot tomorrow, I'm told. And I'm like, okay. I said, do you have the script? He goes, not yet.
Wow.
Now that we have the actor, we're going to go write this. So, of course, the next morning, I get there and there's three pages of just all me.
Oh,
it's my stand-up act. Three pages of it. And it's mean and filthy and about fat people. And it's like an awful comic. And I'm like, he goes, you're cool, right? I'm like, yeah, man. And I said, I need a teleprompter there. And we just, you know, I do stand up. I've been doing stand up since I was 19. So I understand the rhythm of it. And, you know, I can handle that part. But I just wanted to get the lines word perfect because the rhythm, he wrote the rhythm of it right. You know, he understands the stand up kind of rhythm and he had it right. So I'm like, I just got to hit that and be looking at the right guy. And it was fun. I mean, you know, it was
The IMDb has like a super cut of your stuff on the website. And some of that stand up is there, which is super
like
weird.
When you first click on your name.
Because if it's out of context, that's got to be weird for somebody because they're holding down Charlie Neal. They show a shot of him being held down while you're telling the jokes. I'm like, I would talk to somebody. It's a good bit, but out of context, it's got to freak some people out.
I mean, because I do stand up all over the country and I'm sure people are like, well, let's see what he can do.
Are you also Jewish? Yeah, it was, that was one of the last, it's like, holy crap.
Did I say that?
Yeah. It's because that's one of the reasons why I love that character so much because, and as you directed it, I'm sure you knew, like the whole story was about like being doxxed and putting out personal information on the internet. And then your character is literally like, we're defending free speech. And then it's just like, I love it because it's an anti-joke. And it's just like, you're fat, but are you also black or Jewish? And it's like, you're doing it like.
Because you get the line where it's this doesn't work for just one person.
Yeah, you actually say that in there too.
Because he's the only one listening.
Yeah, technically he's the only one in the audience. The rest of them are holding him down or making sure the doors stay closed.
And they're all fighting for my free speech, right?
Yeah.
And the
only one laughing is Chang, which is just such a perfect bit.
Perfect.
He's like holding the door, and then you crack a joke, and you cut to him going. Ah! He goes back to holding the door.
Was Community the first time you worked with Padgett? Padgett, excuse me. I don't know if you've worked with him that much, but
no, Padgett Brewster.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the first time, and it was a real special experience. I thought because she was one of those people who was like, she knew every line, she understood the jokes, and she knew why she was so like. She was very grateful to be in that room with those people doing those jokes. And it was, you know, I was always grateful for that too, but it was nice to see she was like, I'm here and I'm psyched.
She was very good in season 6.
Yeah.
She's very good.
You, and especially your ability to kind of integrate those new players that hadn't been there the whole time, like everybody else, like kind of like riding a bike, but you did a great job of just making them shine, especially since, like we said before, you had a bunch of bottle episodes and then you had like bigger heist ones too. I wanted to ask one going back to, so when you did Advanced Documentary in season 4, that was shot as a mockumentary, which a couple of episodes of Community were. Is it like, was that easier? I've heard that like the mockumentary style of filming is easier because it's a lot more run and gun. You're doing a lot of handheld. There's not as much setting up or tearing down. Is that something you'd be interested in doing further? Or is there like a different style of filming either in TV or film you haven't got a chance to do that you would like to do?
Mockumentary is so, I mean, look, the show I mentioned, which was my favorite show after Community, was the Larry Sanders Show. Mm-hmm. And that was mockumentary. Well, it was documentary style.
It was Larry, everything.
Larry would look at the camera every now and then. This is Spinal Tap. Is, you know, it's the greatest film of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that also mockumentary. And that's the thing that keeps me away from mockumentaries, how good that was. Because mm-hmm. I'm like, if I can't be the very, or if I have no chance of being the best, I'm like, why bother? That's the best. Arrested Development, believe it or not, was mockumentary.
Mm-hmm.
Documentary. And Mitch Hurwitz, we had a, you know, there was a point where, you know, there was a judge who's trying to keep Dave Cross out of the courtroom. And the judge looks into the camera and says, "Hey, no cameras in here." And then the door, you know, closes on them. Mm-hmm. And then there was another scene where Dave Cross and Portia de Rossi are about to have sex. And like the camera is looking through a crack and you see Dave Cross, who's a never nude, the drop jeans. His underwear.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see a sock drop, which is, I guess, was over his penis because he's never nude. And then the door, he comes and closes the door on the camera, and the camera runs around to another room and is able to look through another door. And Mitch was like, you know, a little bit of that is fine, but I'm not ready to have the judge speak to the camera. And I can't admit that it's that much of a mockumentary. I mean, he didn't use those words exactly, but that's sort of his thing. But we shot it, and, you know, but, you know, so shooting mockumentary is easier because it's just what's on that camera. It's generally less. I mean, there was probably coverage of people. I don't even remember the plot of that one. But you know, mockumentary is a little easier because you can also look in the lens. You can speak to the camera. You can do all sorts of things.
Well, and you had a great balance. Like, that's one of my favorite things, because I'm sure you had a more like steady hand on the scales for something like Basic Story, where you have Abed being meta again. But then like he says something, he's like, there's no story. And then there's this really slow pan to a guy just sitting at a desk eating some soup. And that's another one of those instances that I love it so much because it's such an anti-joke. And then you cut to a commercial there and it's like, wait, what? Was there any significance to that guy eating soup? There wasn't. It's just part of the story. And then like Abed's running away from the camera in another one. So it's
just part of the story.
Oh, the amount of layers
just are absolutely wild. Did you ever get a chance to ever watch Community? You appear to be the most busiest human being on the planet. Seriously. So I've never seen it
from beginning to end. Okay. No, but you know, the episodes I see, I'm like, wow, it's such a good episode. And I didn't have to do any work on it at all. the one I still plan to see but never have is Paintball.
Really?
Everyone says the first Paintball one? Everyone says Paintball is the one.
I was going to say there are five, I think, technically.
Well, we don't count the one in the season four because it's so short normally, but you have four, you have Modern Warfare, then you have the two-parter at the end of season two, which Russo's did. Lynn did the first one. And Tribe did Modern Espionage, the last one in season six.
Lynn Shelton?
Justin Lin.
Oh, did the Justin.
First one. Okay. Justin Lin did the first
I
one.
Think it was the Russo's
two-parter. That is an excellent one.
Everyone says that's the best
it's ever. I think you would enjoy it because it's a two-parter where the first part is a Western homage and the second part is a Star Wars homage. So, and that's funny enough, you led into those episodes.
I did. Mm-hmm. I did. And I was around, you know, and there were a lot of people telling me how good they were.
What got them the MCU job. That's what the Russo brothers said. They said
that's how they got
that episode. Feige watched and said, "Why don't we have a meeting?" And that got them Winter Soldier. Yeah, that's cool. so that's cool. It's that good.
Russos are fantastic guys, and you know, obviously I worked with them over at Arrested too. And a lot of things they would be like, "Hey, bring him in." I mean, I owe being a community to the Russos. I owe being at Arrested to the Russos. I love those guys.
Well, I'm happy for all you've done for the show. I did want to say one thing. Watch the season two Halloween episode if you haven't seen it. It's the one where they have George Takei doing voiceover. They have ABBA as a soundtrack. And it's a zombie episode that is not a dream. It's an actual zombie episode at a Halloween party, and it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. Outside, of course, Remedial Chaos Theory, probably the one everybody's seen that one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any like behind the scene thing that's your favorite? I know there when you, the dance that happens in Basic Story where Danny and Jim Rash and Allison were dancing behind
Buried
you.
Buried Treasure. Just
move the camera around for them.
Buried Treasure.
I mean, you've talked about that before. Do you have any others you can think of that was just this is some silly thing that happened and I just enjoyed it?
I mean, you know, the heist, the Ocean's 11 thing was incredible with the doppelganger Dean. You know, I mean, look, Chevy Chase was like everybody. I love Fletch and I love Foul Play. And so when I got there, everyone told me how tough Chevy was going to be. And I'm like, I worked with Burt Reynolds. and it turned out Chevy was like Burt in the sense that he would insult you one day. And then the next day he would like rub my belly and be like, what are we doing, boss? And
as you do,
as you do. And I know he was going through his sort of, all those back injuries he suffered at Saturday Night Live resulted in, you know, a pain pill addiction. And they affected the way he treated people for sure. But that's the same with Burt. I mean, it was the same with Burt Reynolds. All those stunts he did got him into a pain pill addiction. And it affected the way he treated people. And sometimes Burt was wonderful and sometimes Chevy was wonderful. And other times he was not. And there's this, I don't think I have it up here, but there's a coffee cup I was drinking out of today. And it's from the, I must have been from the bar one, the first episode.
Oh, wow.
Where the writers, Chevy's behavior on set had gotten to the point where they wanted to just shoot him out. So the plan would be every time he's in a scene, you shoot his coverage first and then you stage it so that we'll put in the double John with white hair, look really a lot like him. And every other shot would be John's shoulders, back, whatever. But you shoot Chevy, I'd be like, Chevy, you're done for the day. He's like, what? I just got here. You're like, yeah, we shot three scenes here. You're done for the day. And so they stuck him in the, I've made up with Chevy since. So this, I'm going to tell the story anyway. I did the panel for him for vacation at the Academy.
Oh, okay.
Interviewed him and Beverly D'Angelo and everybody. And he had gone sober by then and we got along great. Oh, awesome. But this episode, the writer said, in an effort to help the cast and the director, they had, you know, Chevy had a broken leg in the scene, right? Yeah. So they put him in a wheelchair and they rolled the wheelchair into the revolving door and stuck him in the revolving door so that he can't get out. And so you have to shoot him going into the revolving door. And then we're going to shoot all his lines in the revolving door and shoot him getting out. And then bye-bye, Chevy. And that's what we did. And there was a line that he was putting a pause. He didn't know all the lines all the time. So, it would get take 12, 13, 14, and he kept pausing in my view in the wrong place. And so there's this photograph of me talking to Chevy and he's in these double broken legs or whatever it is. And he's sitting in that chair. And he's jumped out of the chair. He's sitting in my chair, my tall chair. And I'm like this, and I'm trying to explain, you know, what you I can't put the pause here. You got to put it over here because the rhythm of it is, you know, just kind of revs like that. If you put the pause there. And he goes, oh, I see. Are you telling me how to do comedy? And I said, in this case, Chevy, I am. And so I took a photograph of it and made a coffee cup of it. And I have that coffee cup.
Oh, my God. That's
I'll
amazing.
See if I can find that picture and send it to you guys.
Oh, that sounds great.
And by the way, he and I made up. I was there the night he got fired. And
yeah.
You know,
I was not going to ask, but I know you were there. I know that was the episode. Yeah.
You don't want to hear about that?
I didn't want to hear about it, but I didn't want to put you in a bad position.
I don't have a bad position when the truth is all I tell. And, you know, what can you tell me? I did not tell him the truth. I was there. All right. I just say the truth. I don't care. So Chevy, the plot. I don't, but was this season four?
It's season four, the documentary episode.
So it wasn't even Dan.
No.
It wasn't even Dan.
It's not Dan, no.
Well, the interesting thing about that season, and I'm friends with the guys who went over to Goldberg's, who were show running the show at the time. And they're lovely guys, and they're great. And I thought they did a good job. And Dan, in fact, I called Dan when they offered me that episode, and I'm like, I don't have to do this. I said, it doesn't matter to me. And he goes, do it. I want the show to survive. I want it to be good. And then I'll come back if I have a dream of coming back someday. And I'm like, all right, I'll do it. So I'm doing this episode and these guys are taking a lot of heat from the community.
Community. It's okay.
The community. Yeah. Do you guys call it that?
We do now.
Technically, it's communities. That's the name of the Twitter account. That was what they called it.
Community. Yeah, so good. I can't even believe it. Anyway, so...
community squared, whatever.
So they're taking a lot of shit for their work. And their work is good, in my view. I've been there through it all. I understand what's good and not. But they're taking a lot of shit. And by the end, they were like, well, I mean, we wrote it. We gave you the script on time and, just do a great job. Everyone says you do a good job. I'm like, okay, great. So around 7 o'clock on a Friday, we're going to shoot, our schedule, because that's like communities. We started that day at around 1 p.m. We're going to finish around 3 a.m. And these guys who are great guys and great writers, they leave at around 7 because they're like, they're doing banker's hours now because they're like, now everyone's yelling at us all the time anyway. We're just going to go hang out with our kids. So I'm left with no writer on this one. And so it's just me and the cast, and we're shooting. And the gag is that Chevy Chase, they're trying to distract the board of something that's maybe to try to get them to stop.
The MacGuffin Institute's going to give them money. Yeah, and
it was a MacGuffin Institute. That was right.
Literally the MacGuffin
Institute. MacGuffin Institute. Mm-hmm. It's very good. They're going to buy Greendale or something like that, right? Like
a grant, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the idea is that we need to distract them. And Chevy's like, oh, I have an idea. I do a racist puppet routine. Not Chevy, the actor, the character.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And so they're like, great, we'll do that. And so it's, basically I can't remember the exact joke, but Chevy comes in and, they've painted his right hand is yellow with like long, stringy Fu Manchu. He's like an Asian puppet. And the other one's in blackface, this puppet, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, he's in blackface. I'll put him between Yvette and Donald Glover and he'll say this line and then look right and then look left and realize, oh, I've just stepped in it. I've said, oh, I'll do this racist blackface. I have a blackface puppet. And mm-hmm. He goes, oh, I do a blackface puppet that's really funny. It'll be distracting. And then I put him between those two actors. And he looked left and looked right and he did the thing. And it set off a problem. Like it wasn't that line was implicitly a racial issue, but it was that over the seasons he had other racial issues. I mean, let's be frank, right?
Yeah.
And so Yvette had enough. And she just sort of snapped about it. And I'm like, I put him there and she wouldn't come out of her trailer. And then he, suddenly he shows up on the set. Like he's supposed to, he's like, I've been told I have to apologize. And I'm like, it's not really your fault. We wrote this for you. And I put you in the middle. And he goes, in my day, I'll forget to tell you this part. His hand is fully blackface with the mm-hmm. lips on it. And the nuke wrinkle, which I already told you about, is this hand was now yellow with long hair. And this was the Chinese puppet, which was an added thing that we were going to bring in. And so he's like, and he's yelling because he's been told he has to apologize. And he's like, this is bullshit. In my day, we with Richard Pryor on Saturday Night Live, we said the N-word and everybody got it. And we knew it was a joke. And he's gesticulating with this, all these black face hand and yellow face hand. And he's like, you know, and he's upset. And then he leaves the thing and he apologizes. Yvette doesn't take the apology. And then it leaks to Deadline in the middle of the fuck. It's middle of the night. It's 1 a.m. So one of us leaked it, right? We don't know who. So now he's like, Paramount or NBC is like, you're out, right? You can't, you know, you're out because of the race thing. So then he comes storming back on the set. He goes, who did it? And he's now still got these two hands. And he's around. I'm a hand. Someone apologize to me. And he's losing his mind. And I'm like, I'm talking to him, right? He's yelling around me. He's not yelling at me. But I hear this giggling behind me. And I'm like, and I turn and it's Donald Glover. And he's just giggling. and I'm like, and Chevy goes, what's so fucking funny? He still has the puppet. Donald goes, well, you got the black face hands and the yellow face hands and the fuck you. Fuck all of you. And he storms upset. And I was like,
wow.
All right. So
how long did it take your brain to process that night?
I said to the AD, I'm like, so he's not coming back. here's what we're going to do. In the next scene, we got two more scenes to shoot. Donald, you're going to take Chevy's line. And Allison, you'll take the other line. And then the next scene, we'll just give all your lines to Joel. And we'll just finish the scene. And that's what we did. We just finished the night and finished the episode. And that was it. So
I will say the super ironic part of that is this is very much a art imitating life, whereas there's an episode where the same thing has to happen. It's in season one, right, Matt? Where Pierce has to apologize.
Where he says something incredibly bad, and then
he pantses her. He literally...
Yeah, he pants off. Her in season... There's a season one episode where he pants Shirley.
And then he apologizes. He apologizes to the wrong black woman, because there's another black woman on a bench. And then there was also, what was the other one that was just like this? There was another art. Oh, and then the whole thing after taking down episodes that involve blackface, because they took down Advanced Dungeons and Dragons off of Netflix, whereas this instance is a little bit more like towing that line.
Yeah, he's technically.
I heard they took down the blackface one. I was wondering if it was this one.
The only episode they pulled is the Advanced D&D from season two, the 14th episode, because Chang's in blackface. And
but I guess because it was a puppet hand in blackface.
They didn't. They didn't treat it the same.
Woo, doggy.
Well, I'll tell you, the brown face from Chang Dynasty comes up. It's like, if they pulled this one, they pulled this one. Like they may at some point.
Who was in brown face in Chang Dynasty?
Chevy. It was Pierce. It was Chevy.
Chevy is he shows up as the Swami.
I love that. He was doing that little accent, and I thought it was funny. I mean,
Chevy's funny.
That he was also, I'm going to pin it on the, had trouble with some substances. I'm going to pin it on that, because when I saw him at the vacation thing, we got along famously, and he was delightful. What can you say?
He just had an interview where he just said, "Yeah, I've been difficult. I don't care." he just said, "I'm me."
I know he is him, and he's a complicated guy. Enormously talented, and all of it is true.
Your story sounded very similar to the one that I heard, which was a third hand from one of the writers who wasn't there when you were doing. So that makes sense. When an episode is being filmed, about how many people are on the set?
That one was a big one because there were all the people from the MacGuffin Institute were there too. I mean, there had to be 80, 70 people.
Yeah, okay. So, my guess is, I said at least 40. I said there's at least 40 people there when he says the word he says. And that some of them can get money from.
Well, somebody called the deadline and or whoever it was. And I disagree with that move because it's just not, you know, we're artistic people and we're supposed to be able to speak freely on those sets. and calling the press in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not a, I mean, I don't discount the behavior that race or the racist behavior that, yeah. that caused the negative feeling about him, but mm-hmm. I don't believe that Deadline is the way to handle it. However, maybe they got what they wanted and that they got him off the show. Like, until he became a ghost and came back, right?
Yeah. Yeah. In the 501
for a cameo.
Just two more questions, and thank you so much for this. How was Yahoo feel different from the NBC seasons? Other than you were broke?
Time. Did you say broke?
Yeah, they were broke.
Yeah, I mean, the time of episodes, they were longer, I think, mm-hmm. right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So we were kind of like felt a little freer to do our thing, which I liked. The Yahoo executives were so new that they didn't know how to give notes the way NBC did. I mean, NBC, when they give notes, you know, once the network leaves and you have, it depends on the showrunner, but if they're really as strong as Dan, they you know, they have some opinions on the network notes, and they're fun. You know, it's a tradition for writers to sort of rebel against network notes after the network leaves. We make jokes about it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they're wrong. It's just the way it goes. But with Yahoo, they were just happy to be there and have a high profile show. And they were new. They were internet people. So they didn't know how to give notes. And so we'd finish a thing and they go, "That's awesome. You guys going to finish on time and on budget?" You're like, "Yeah, your ass, we're not." And then we wouldn't. They'd be like, "Oh no, you're over budget." You're like, "Ah, no, jeez."
That's why.
And then that's, you know, it was a freer time. You know, whether that's good or bad, I don't know. You know, I don't. I think resistance is often the mother of some pretty great invention.
Dan did say that in the commentaries. He said, yeah. "There's the great thing was the freedom. The bad thing was the freedom."
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that was a good point.
Yeah. We'll do. So after going through all that, and speaking of those notes, since you wear so many different hats, and this we can wrap up after this. We've taken up so much of your time. We've gone over so much. So you're writing, you're acting, you're directing, you're producing, you're doing all of these different things, either in front of or behind the camera. Is there a favorite note or direction you've ever had or got? Like, for instance, there was one time I'm filming a scene where my buddy he's supposed to be losing his virginity, but it looked too good. And I'm like, "All right, can you hump with something that isn't your pelvis?" Because if you think about how comedic, it's like, okay, if you're humping with your right shoulder, it's going to look really awkward. It's going to be uncomfortable for everybody. He did that and it was golden and funny. So is there like anywhere in the whole, we'll go anything that pops out in your head? Because you have such already a storied career that we're only, thankfully, in the very beginning. We wish you many more years of success.
You know, when Burt Reynolds first showed up on Dukes of Hazzard, I knew he was difficult to work with, but I didn't know that he also didn't know his lines. And it was my fault. I scheduled him the first day on the set with a five-page scene where he had almost all the lines. And he didn't know any of the lines. So any of them. You're like, "Have you read this?" And anyway, so I have a trick for that. I just, when I have an actor who doesn't know the lines, like Chevy, I try to shoot, except in Chevy's case, because we shot him first. Mm-hmm. I try to shoot the other actors. So then while the camera's on other people, the actor doesn't know the lines can learn the lines. Mm-hmm. And so I did that with Bert. I shot Sean William Scott and Johnny Knoxville, and I shot him and I shot him and I shot him. "Oh yeah, Bert will learn the lines." And he didn't learn the lines, right? He didn't learn in that time. And so when we flipped the camera around, it was just not working. And he goes, "I got a trick." And he goes, give me the lines. And so we cut the lines out and we taped them to Knoxville's
wonderful Godfather.
John William Scott's shirt.
Wow.
And he's looking at him, "You guys, I don't know if you belong in jail, but you don't belong in Hazard." You know, and I'm like, "Bert, you got to look up at their eyes every now and then." He goes, "Ah." I mean, you can't just read their shirts. He goes, I learned how to act from a man named Jimmy Stewart. Good enough for you? And I'm like, yeah, but just read the. Can we get a little higher in the look?
You're not that much line. Taller than the, your eyeline would work.
Yeah. Anyway, that.
Wow.
I'll give you one John Oliver story and then whatever. That's fine.
Oh, yeah, that joke, yes, please.
I think, and I'm not 100% sure, I either was the one who first directed John Oliver, or I did it, or maybe he'd done it a couple times already. I thought it was the first, but maybe not, right? So John and I were, I was a fan of his from The Daily Show. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, man, John, I'm a big fan. And I said, but, you know, like acting, that's a whole, I said, have you acted before? And he goes, no. And I said, are you, I don't know, you've got some pretty funny people around here. Does acting make you nervous? And he goes, how hard could it be? And I'm like, that's exactly what I want you to say. Exactly what I want you to say.
Oh, that's, man.
You look him in the face and be like, I hate how casually you said that. You know, you're how long so I've been working on this shit.
Incredibly difficult thing for other people. Well, Jay, thank you. Just thank you. This has been an absolute blast. It's an absolute joy to talk to people who get to work on the show and have these, not just the inside stories, but you seem to really enjoy why you were there, the time you were there, and the people. And you know, I agree. Allison Brie, Donald Glover, and Yvette, all of them are just ridiculously funny and capable
Joel's
people.
Funny. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, Britta, Jesus. Jillian,
Danny Pudi, yeah.
Danny.
Just talent Jim across Rash, the board. Yeah. So I'm excited about it. I've already seen a trailer for Easter Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Joe Coy 1,000 times, so I'm looking forward to seeing the movie.
He's great in the movie. He's really natural, really funny, really great, real Joe Coy. I love him.
And I'm going to make sure that Dan installs the app so he can be somebody I can recommend things to, like chocolate chip cookies.
Chips Ahoy.
And Community.
Chips Ahoy, yeah.
And Community. I'm gonna Community. Get on and vouch for Community right now.
By default. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, and thank you for your time, Jay.
Thank you. Appreciate it.